You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Welcome to Move the Sticks, presented by the Ford F-Series. DJ and Bucky here. And Bucky, take a deep breath, man. This was a wild weekend of NFL football.
Great weekend of NFL football. We talk about this game. This game is unbelievable. It's a real-life soap opera. Watching everything play out over the course of the weekend. Say what you want to about the ratings being up or down. At the end of the day, football is king, and it's king because you have great quarterback play, you have great defenses, you have the stars taking their game up a notch when it's needed. I love what I saw this weekend. I can't wait to talk about it on the podcast.
No, it was bonkers. So what we're going to do, this is normally our 10 takeaway pod, but we only got four teams remaining now, but we had four games over the weekend. So we're going to do one takeaway for each game. And, man, plenty to get into on each of these games. But let's start off here with the Eagles and their game against the Atlanta Falcons, which was a really entertaining game. And to me, my big takeaway, Alshon Jeffrey is the key to this Philadelphia offense in the postseason.
That goes Bolt. Here comes the rush. He steps up. He looks. He fires. Complete down the left side. Alshon Jeffrey knocked out of bounds across midfield and out of bounds at the Falcons 44. What a good play by Foles.
I tell you what, this is a great job by Nick Foles.
Now, this is a passing offense, and we didn't know what we were going to get, and all that pressure on Nick Foles, and the numbers look great, 23 of 30, 246 yards, no touchdowns, no picks, but played a pretty clean game there. But to me, Alshon Jeffrey, when they needed to get the thing moving in the second half, we talked about it on the air when we were doing the show on Game Day Highlights, Buck, but a lot of RPOs, got him some slants, had a nice little out route that was a big conversion for them, ended up four catches for 61 yards. But I thought when plays needed to be made, I think there's a comfort level with Nick Foles, who's not the most precisely accurate quarterback. We talk about expanding the strike zone with a big physical wide receiver. That's what Alshon Jeffrey gives him.
Yeah, absolutely. They needed to address their wide receiver core last year. They didn't have a true number one. They had Nelson Aguilar and Jordan Matthews. One of those guys was supposed to be the number one. Couldn't really figure out. Kind of rotated on a game-by-game basis. In the offseason, they committed to upgrading that unit. Alshon Jeffrey comes over. He is the number one. He is the guy that is the focal point of the passing game. Kind of recess and put everybody else in the correct roles. Torrey Smith is the number two. Doesn't make as many plays. Nelson Aguilar kind of moves into the slot, and everything works. But in big games, when you need your stars to step up, this is when you need your number one receiver to make plays. Alshon Jeffrey made enough plays to really reset the passing game, allow other people to kind of eat off his work, and it worked. It worked with Nick Foles. It'll continue to work. He has to be big, and he should have an opportunity to do so. It's going to get a little tougher, though, against the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun matchup, which we will preview a little bit later on in the week. We'll give you a little sneak preview here. It's going to be Alshon Jeffrey and Xavier Rhodes. That's going to be a main event, heavyweight fight there on the outside. I can't wait for that one. A couple other things from this game. Look, I thought the Eagles able to overcome some miscues there. You look at Jay Ajayi fumbling early in that game after they get a big pass interference penalty. He drops a ball a little bit later on as well. They fumble as they're going in, and Foles is aware enough to be able to follow on it. Doesn't score, but puts them right there. They go ahead and score on the next play. So it wasn't a clean game for them. I think that's to be expected when you talk about them sitting starters in week 17 and then having a bye week. But I thought it was some clean football for them in the second half. Balance on offense, the defensive line kind of doing their thing. So this team right now, I think this team can win at home against the Minnesota Vikings. They need to play a cleaner game. But I thought this was good for them to get a win without necessarily being on your A game here against the Falcons.
Yeah, I thought it was critical. I think the big thing, we saw how the Philadelphia Eagles kind of changed their style defensively. Earlier in the year, when you knew your offense is putting up 30 points a game, you could lay back, just kind of play safe, play conservative, keep the ball in front, and allow the things to come to you. I think in this game, we knew that they couldn't counter their offense to consistently score. We saw them ratchet it up a little bit, saw them dominate, saw them play aggressive but smart. We didn't see them do a lot of press coverage. They didn't come up and challenge Julio Jones in his face. They played off, played top down, did a great job of being able to control the game. And Fletcher Cox was everything that you said that he would be. Dominated the game from inside. And because he's able to dominate the game inside, you can't run it. You have a tougher time throwing it. He made his mark. He put an imprint on this game, and he's one of the reasons why they're moving on to the next round.
Three dropped interceptions for the Eagles. They can't do that next week against the Minnesota Vikings if they want to advance to the Super Bowl. Let's flip it over real quick to the Atlanta Falcons. Your takeaway there, Steve Sarkisian, offensive coordinator, got a lot of grief for that play sequence down there at the end of the game, down by five inside the 10-yard line. The second down shovel pass people had a problem with, and you also look at the fourth down play, getting Matt Ryan on the move. People weren't happy with that play call as well. Where do you stand on the Sark play calls, and where do you stand on him going forward?
You know, I think Sark and the offense, obviously, they have to spend the entire offseason trying to figure out what their identity is. Sark stepped into a tough situation. Kyle Shanahan had really controlled this offense and was really driving it like it was a Ferrari. Sark steps in and still doesn't know how to necessarily drive the car. It took him a while to kind of figure out all the parts, where everything was, and he never quite figured it out. I believe this season, this offseason, he'll have an opportunity to really study what they do well, study the personnel, better come up with a plan to really elevate the talent that is there. Because you can't say anything about the Atlanta Falcons in terms of what they need. They have everything. Wide receivers, running backs, they have a tight end, they have a quarterback, they have all that. This comes down to the play caller trying to find a way to figure it out. Right now, you talk about hot seats, he may enter the season with the hottest seat in Atlanta as the OC.
Yeah, they have some things they need to work out. Hopefully you see year two here with this coordinator. You see the same thing you saw with Kyle Shanahan year two. They make a big jump, but we'll have to wait and see next year. Let's move on to the next game here. Let's go the Patriots-Titans game. To me, the big takeaway from this one, this Patriot defense is peaking at the right time.
And Mariota says, let me get out of here. No, not in time. As he's chased down again. And Geno Grissom got him.
Would you have believed if I told you before this game that Tennessee would see its quarterback sacked seven times?
Yeah, Jim Nance there on the call ended up being one more. I think they got a sack on the very next play. Eight sacks of Marcus Mariota. Buck, we talked about coming into this game, Bill Belichick's going to make you left-handed. Everybody always says the same thing. They're not going to lose the football game because Derrick Henry and Marcus Mariota run all over them. They were going to shut that down. They were going to put the ball in Marcus Mariota's hands, and they were going to attack him. And to me, when you look at this eight-sack performance, I got a chance to break down the tape. We'll get into that a little bit later on in the week. We'll have a video to kind of explain what I'm talking about here, give you a good visual for it. But they hit him with a lot of bluff blitzes, man. You saw a lot of linebackers kind of mug up there, bail out for a count, and then come, and they came clean. They really, really messed with this pass protection scheme and a very good offensive line for the Tennessee Titans. And to me, the sum is greater than the individual parts with New England's defense, and they're peaking at absolutely the right time.
They are peaking at absolutely the right time. And what we saw from Bill Belichick and what the Patriots were able to do defensively, they were able to generate a pass rush. They got it with four. Sometimes they brought an extra rusher. They played man-to-man and occasional zone back there, but they were able to play coverage. And this is what the Patriots always do. They line up. They play a very simple coverage. They do a great job of just drilling it over and over and over. And over the course of the season, they end up playing very good defense. They always are really good in the red zone, and they make it very, very tough for you to score. I think as they move forward, if they can continue to get a consistent pass rush like they were able to generate on Saturday in the divisional round, they'll have an opportunity to hoist another Lombardi, because that has been the biggest thing that they've been missing. They haven't had a consistent pass rush. They got it this weekend. Let's see if they can continue to get that kind of pass rushing presence.
And Tom Brady, we're sitting there on the set right when that game started. We were recording some stuff, and I wrote down on the piece of paper next to you, I said, Tom Brady, 350 plus. I thought this was a chance for him against this Titans defense. I thought he would go off. Didn't quite get to the 350 mark, got to 337 yards, three touchdowns, no picks. And when I went back and watched the tape, Buck, he had 337. He might have left 100 yards out in the field because he had Brandon Cooks naked down the field a couple times. Uncharacteristically, Brady didn't find him. Some of them resulted in completions. Other ones were him just checking the ball down. But they're going to go back and look at that tape, and they're going to realize they even missed some opportunities and still put up 337 passing yards.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's the thing with them. They put you in a bind. I'll say the New England Patriots and the way they run their offense, because Tom Brady controls it at the point of attack. He understands how to get you in that bad matchup, and he won't let you out. They did miss the deep ball a couple times to Brandon Cooks. That's something that they add to it. If they're able to get the vertical element to go with the horizontal passing game that they typically display, yeah, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem for people.
No question. I cannot wait to watch this matchup with Jacksonville, too. Jacksonville's going to be aggressive and come after them. I got to bite my tongue. I want to preview this thing so bad right now, but I want to just kind of – let's just talk about what we saw last week. We got time for that later on in the week. But, yeah, man, the Jags decide to do and how they try and handle Gronk is going to be – that's going
to
be fun.
We'll have a chance to preview it all tomorrow. Got all our video next week because you guys are heading East-West Shrine Bowl. So we got a lot of taping to do tomorrow and previewing to do. So we'll come out with all those later in the week.
Yeah, that'll be fun. We'll be rocking and rolling, man. All right, Buck, the Titans, your takeaway at all with them going into the offseason? It looks like Mike Mularkey, according to our Ian Rapoport, is going to be back, and it looks like maybe even a contract extension coming his way. So from the hot seat to some security there, quite a turn there over a couple weeks for Mike Mularkey.
See, that's why you got to win. You win, everybody is happy. Things happen for the coach when you win. Or you can be Bill O'Brien and just kind of find a way to get contract extensions for no reason.
Ooh, ooh. By the way, one other theme.
Sorry.
listen to you. One other theme, speaking of that, when you look at who's playing in the NFC Championship game, Buck, can we eliminate the whole, you know what, our quarterback got hurt, our season's over, you know?
Oh, no.
You just get it. That's like, for some reason, the quarterback gets hurt, we just give people a free pass. Well, the quarterback got hurt. Well, Carson Wentz got hurt. They're in the NFC Championship game.
Absolutely.
The Vikings lost two quarterbacks. They're in the NFC Championship game.
I think what we're seeing sheds a light on executives and their team building process. The guys who are really, really good understand that, yes, the quarterback is the most important part. But if you don't have the rest of the roster right, you can't withstand that injury. And when I look at all of these teams that are in the Final Four, the Jags, the Patriots, the Eagles, and the Vikings, they're constructed pretty well. I think the one team that's the outlier would be the New England Patriots, because if we stacked up the rosters and took the quarterbacks out or whatever, we would probably say that that roster ranks fourth of all those teams and that TB12 is the one guy that keeps everything afloat. Because I don't really know how many blue chip players or high end guys that could go and be transcendent and dominate at other places exist in New England outside of Gronk and Tom Brady.
Oh, it's really interesting, fascinating when you look at this. I'm looking at just defenses. Let's look at the defenses of these teams that are remaining. Jacksonville, that was second in the league in sacks with 55. The team they just beat, Pittsburgh, who was right there, they were first with 56. You look at New England, they're tied for seventh with 42. Then you get down to Philadelphia's got 38. They're right in the middle of the pack at 15th. Minnesota's right there behind them, tied for 17th at 37th, with 37 sacks, I should say. So these teams, like, there's nobody – you got to be able to play some defense. You got to be able to rush the quarterback to win big in this league right now.
You absolutely have to do it. You absolutely have to be able to play defense. And when you looked at the numbers, it was funny because scoring was down, touchdowns were down. Teams were actually playing better defense, but the way that people are playing is a little different. They're letting you have your way from 20 to 20, but they're doing really, really a really good job of focusing and honing in on the red zone. That's the way the Patriots have always played. That's why you can't really judge them by all of the individual pieces. They just play team defense, do a great job doing it.
No question. All right, let's keep things rolling here. You got a couple takeaways to finish us up here. You got something here for the Jags in their win.
Jaguars defense and ground game gives them a chance to win it all.
So now first and goal from inside the 4-yard line. Set up on the near hash mark. Fournette by himself in the backfield. He'll take the handoff, runs up the middle, lowers himself toward the goal line. Touchdown, Jacksonville! They add on with 10:34 to play here in the fourth quarter. They lead it 34-21. They convert once again inside the red zone.
you have to absolutely love what the Jacksonville Jaguars have been able to do. We talk about a team that is built to play in the postseason, and we've said it for years, that when you look at their team, they have all the pieces in place to be able to do it. They have an outstanding defense. You talk about a decade's worth of top 10 picks that they've been able to commit to that unit. They play like that. Then in the ground game, Leonard Fournette coming over, picking him up in the draft, having a dominant bell cow running back. Well, people kind of were up and down on him because he has some injuries, but they got him for this moment, and this moment is in the playoffs. When you have to run the football and be able to impose your will, Leonard Fournette was able to do that. He was on his way to having a monster game, and he had over 100 yards. He had 3 touchdowns. He did the things that we expected him to do, but the way it looked early, he was on his way to a 200-yard game. If the Jacksonville Jaguars can run the ball the way that they ran it today against the Pittsburgh Steelers, they will absolutely have an opportunity to hoist the Lombardi Trophy, regardless of who's playing quarterback for them.
Now, it's interesting. I'm just trying to look for some bigger takeaways here, and we get back to the Jags specifically. Talk about teams that run the football. We've got 4 teams remaining, Buck. You know where they rank in rushing offense this year? The Jacksonville Jaguars are number 1. The Philadelphia Eagles are number 3. The Minnesota Vikings are number 7. The New England Patriots are number 10. So I saw you got your pen out there. Jacksonville 1, Philly 3, Minnesota 7, New England 10. How about explosive runs, Buck? Runs of 20-plus yards. The Philadelphia Eagles are 1st with 19. The Minnesota Vikings are 4th with 15. The Jacksonville Jaguars are 7th with 13. Ooh. And let's see, the last one there, the only one we haven't, the Patriots are actually, they're 14th. So they're the only, that's the only outside the top 10 number when you look at explosive runs and rushing offense with our final 4.
Because no matter what we say, like, yes, quarterback play is important, but you have to run the ball to be able to win. Whether it's at the beginning of the game to set up your play action or at the end of the game to close it out, you have to be able to have a consistent running game because your defense and your running game travels. It gives you an opportunity to play through a bad game for your quarterback. And so, look, TB12 is the outlier. All of these quarterbacks are journeyman quarterbacks that we're trying to figure out what they can do in the league. But because the rest of the roster, the defense, the run game, the special teams contributions, they're able to get all that stuff, they're able to do it. But what you point out in the run game, I'm a big believer in, because running the ball at somebody takes their heart, takes their soul, changes the way they want to play the game, particularly late in games.
And we get to the other side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball, going up against the run. Okay, look at the AFC teams. Kind of interesting. The AFC teams, New England's 20th against the run. Jacksonville's 21st. But you flip over to the NFC against the run. Philadelphia Eagles, number 1. Minnesota Vikings, number 2.
Yeah, there's a bit of an emphasis on the run game, particularly in the NFC, when you look at the way they do it. I just think it's interesting how those teams – play. I think the big thing about the Jaguars and also the Patriots, the way they're built, like, it's a little more pass first in the AFC. Maybe that has to do maybe the quarterback play. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think the big thing with the Jags, it would be interesting to go back and look at the Jags once they added number 99, Marcel Darius, because Darius, to me, has changed the way that they play up front. He can dominate the game at the point of attack and gives them a little bit. As a pass rusher, they don't necessarily use him in that role like he was used previously up in Buffalo. But as a run stopper, he's one of the best in the biz.
All right, let's get to this point here. You just mentioned, we talked about the Jags. The Steelers, we'll get to them in just a second, what they're gonna do in the offseason here. But I want to touch on, now we've touched on the Patriots, we've touched on the Jags. I presented you with this question before we went on live here, and I want to get your answer and let the folks get your answer, because I think we're on the same page here. We came up with the same number to this question. The question is, how many New England defensive players would start for Jacksonville?
Oof. Oof. Man, this,
it's not pretty, Buck.
That's tough. I mean, when you look at
– Jacksonville is loaded.
I mean, when you look at – I mean, when you look at what they're doing, it's hard. I mean, it's hard to point them out. It's hard to point out who. Maybe Devin McCourty, maybe, but
– Devin McCourty, I think, would start at safety. Yes, I agree with that. I think that's the one.
That's it, though. I don't think there's another
– If you want to put Malcolm Butler as your third corner, maybe. You want to put Gilmore or Butler would be the third corner for the Jags. I wouldn't take either one of them over the two that are starting for Jacksonville.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I don't know how you can do
those linebackers. You look at Jacksonville's linebackers, and then you throw those linebackers up against Kyle Van Noy and company there with New England. I mean, come on.
I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you can.
And none of those guys up front would start either. I think New England has one player. I think Devin McCourty is the only person. If they all tried out for the Jacksonville Jaguars, he's the only one that would get a starting jersey.
He's the only one. He's the only one that would get a black jersey.
That's it.
I mean, I kind of agree with
you. I mean, look, and I give New England credit. Their sum is greater than their individual parts. They fit in their roles nicely, and they're coached up beautifully. They work well together. I get that. But if you want to talk about individual talent, Devin McCourty's the only one that gets a jersey.
Only one. I mean, it's tough. They're able to do it. Their defense is lights out. Now, if we talked about offensively or whatever, I think it would be a different outcome. But defensively, I think it's obvious that Jacksonville Jaguars have a superior roster when it just comes to the pure talent that they have individually. Now, the Patriots play well as a group, and the group sometimes exceeds what we see from the individual collection of talent. But there's no denying the Jacksonville Jaguars have a number of blue players on that side of the ball, and that might be enough to just get them to the championship.
All right, what's your take on where the Steelers go from here?
You know, the Steelers they're a tough team to look at and evaluate. We talked about the explosiveness of their offense and the pieces that they have. They have some nice weapons, Juju Smith-Schuster, Martavis Bryant, to complement AB84, who was terrific today, coming off the calf injury. Jesse James emerged as a viable threat down the middle of the field, and you have Lev Bell. So offensively, they really look good. Their biggest issue continues to be the defensive side of the ball and how they want to play. They talked about being more of a man-to-man team, and that's fine. But I think the big thing when it comes to the Pittsburgh Steelers, they always have to be the toughest team on the field. And in two times in going against the Jacksonville Jaguars were clearly the tougher team. And I think that toughness comes out in their ability to run the ball, tell you they're going to run the ball, and still run it down your throat. They own both lines of scrimmage, their offensive line and their defensive line. And until the Pittsburgh Steelers are able to kind of impose their will and flex their muscles on the opponents, they're always going to kind of get stuck in this little round where they're not able to get all the way to the final dance.
And I'm not. Look, there'll be plenty of people. You can listen to any radio show in the country. You'll hear a ton of criticism from Mike Tomlin for some of the decisions at the end of that game. And trust me, I believe they're warranted. I'm not going to waste my breath talking about it because I'm sure everybody else on the planet is talking about it. But the onside kick was questionable, but then not using your timeouts in front of the 2-minute warning, that's just like kind of – that's clock management 101. You're going to save yourself about 8 to 10 seconds by burning those timeouts before the 2-minute warning. The other thing – here was the other question. Somebody – I had a buddy from a team that sent me a text on this. It said they had absolutely – when they had about 30 seconds, right, they're in field goal range with 30 seconds. You have to kick the field goal right then. And then hope you get the onside kick, and then you have a shot. You have a shot at the end zone. You throw a Hail Mary. At least you give yourself a fighting chance. And we saw in the Minnesota game, that's all you can ask for is to have a shot there at the end. But to bleed the clock down and be running offensive plays all the way down to 1 second, when you need two scores, the math doesn't work. They needed to kick the field goal, get the points, try and get the onside kick and get the Hail Mary. Just the whole thing was screwy there at the end of the game.
It was screwy, and you're right. Sometimes you have to take chances like that. You have to figure out a way to manipulate the clock to give yourself the best opportunity to find a way to tie that game up. They didn't do it. They used up all the clock, didn't give themselves a legitimate chance to come back. And unfortunately, that's something that they have to evaluate in the offseason.
All right, let's get to the last takeaway here. The craziest game of the day, Stephon Diggs with the walk-off winner there, which was phenomenal. But what was your big takeaway from this game, Buck?
The Vikings might be the best team in the tournament.
Case on a deep drop. Steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side. Caught by Diggs. Stay
oh
back.
My God. Oh, loose. My God.
30.
No. 10.
Touchdown.
Oh.
Are you kidding me?
Miracle finish.
It's a Minneapolis miracle. Step on Diggs. And the Minnesota Vikings have walked up on the New Orleans Saints. It's a 61-yard Minneapolis miracle. Embracing legs. He ran into the tunnel.
Unbelievable play. And when I talk about the Minnesota Vikings being the best team, make sure you pay attention to the air quotes that I'm using. When I say team, offense, defense, special teams, the Minnesota Vikings don't have a glaring hole in any area. Offensively, they can run the ball with Latavius Murray. They can throw the ball outside. I think they have the best 1-2 punch at wide receiver in Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. Defensively, they can stop the run. They can harass you with four defenders at the point of attack. They got fast linebackers, and then they have a secondary that makes plays. And then the special teams aspect, you think about the depth of their team, they have A-plus players playing on those units. And so if you talk about a team, they have all the phases clicking at one time, and that is why it doesn't matter who plays quarterback for them. They can offset it because their team is constructed, I think, maybe better than anybody else that's remaining in the tournament.
I tell you what, they did with their offensive line in the offseason, the pieces that they added there with Riley Reiff and what they did with this rookie center from Ohio State, the job that he's done. I mean, look, they've made all the right moves. Remmers came over, who I wasn't crazy about that move, but that's worked out well for him. This is a roster, like you said, that's absolutely loaded and has been able to withstand injury to the top two quarterbacks and their stud rookie running back, and they have not skipped a beat. I think you got to give the entire organization there a lot of credit for that. However, my takeaway from this, watching this game and the miracle finish that they had, phenomenal. I felt terrible for Marcus Williams, by the way, who is one of our favorite players in the draft. It's fun to watch it. Utah made all kind of plays. But just to sound like, look, kind of just didn't want to get the penalty. So he tried to duck underneath it in the process. He ended up picking off Crawley. If he could have just stood his ground, even if he didn't tackle him, if he just slowed him down until the Calvary arrives, you make the tackle, you get out of there with the win. But I want to just get to, if you're the Philadelphia Eagles watching this game, are you relieved that the Vikings won? I know Yes. The Vikings defense is loaded, but if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, I'm with you. I did not want to see Drew Brees. I don't want to see Drew Brees come in there. I know Case Keenum's had a great year. It's been magical. He's going to make over $20 million a year next year. I don't doubt it, but I'd still much rather take my chances with Case Keenum than Drew Brees.
I absolutely would take my chances, because it was funny at the end of the game, whenever the Vikings made the field goal, I tweeted out, would you rather be the Vikings with the lead with a minute left to go to the championship, or the Saints with the ball and number 9 as your quarterback in that situation? And it played out like we thought it would play out. Drew Brees was masterful, took them right down the field, put them in a position to kick a game-winning field goal. They knocked it through. Unfortunately, they couldn't close it out. Their defense couldn't make the plays to get it done. But you're right. Drew Brees always keeps his team in a game. And even though he's older, there's something about him in a one-game scenario that you certainly didn't want to see it if you're Philadelphia. I know Jim Schwartz was like, woo, glad, close that book up, put them away, we'll focus on the Vikings, because it would have been a tough matchup just because Brees and Kamara and the things that they do offensively, they just are really, really a tough challenge.
Well, again, I mentioned it a minute ago. Against the run, Philadelphia's number 1 in the league. Minnesota's number 2. When you look at rushing offenses, Philadelphia's number 3. Minnesota's number 7. This is going to be a physical, physical NFC East Championship game featuring two quarterbacks that were backups for Jeff Fisher there with the Los Angeles Rams for a minute. So
how about that?
I love this.
How about that?
I'd love to be with him and watch that game. I would love to be with Jeff and watch that game. It'd be entertaining.
I know, because he'd tell you that. Oh, I knew that. I knew that they could play. We were close to getting them there, and time ran out on me. Yeah
man, they need to – Jeff Fisher needs to lobby for a job as a GM. He's got it all wrong. Forget lobbying for a job as a coach. Be like, dude, I'm bringing all these guys in. Now you just need somebody to coach them. We'll be good.
He just needs somebody to coach him, somebody to get him up.
All right. Saints offseason priorities. I mean, they have got a lot of young pieces on the defense. They had the best draft of any team in the league last year. They hit on 4 studs. They got 5 or 6 guys that are going to end up being starters for them. They absolutely hit a home run there. But when you look at them in the offseason, what are you thinking there, Buck?
I think they just need to put another draft class on top of the one that they just have. There's no doubt that they knocked it out the park 2017. That draft really elevated them, put them in a position where they could and maybe should have been playing in the championship game. Now you got to go back to work, go find some more pieces to add to the puzzle. Still need another pass rusher to kind of join. Cam Jordan, Sheldon Rankins, and those guys. Find one of those guys. maybe another big-time receiver. Ted Ginn Jr. has been great. Maybe find another young guy that can complement Michael Thomas on the outside. But really, they have it all. They have everything that you look for. Just put another class together. And maybe, maybe you find Drew Brees' successor in this draft. That might be the move to take them to the next level. Find someone that can step in when number nine eventually walks off, that he can step in and be ready.
They got that guy, Taysom Hill. He's blocking punts right now, but he's coming back to take Drew Brees' job here in a couple years. Come on.
Hey, I like
Taysom Hill might be older. He might be older than Drew Brees.
He might be. I like Taysom Hill. I like the fact that he's been able to contribute on special teams and do that thing. But look, it's early in the process. But, man, imagine if the New Orleans Saints were able to land a guy like Baker Mayfield. That is like a Drew Brees clone in some
value. But
if they can find a young guy that could do some of the things that Drew Brees does, they don't have to change their offense, but really could develop him, maybe take a year or two to get him ready, because I know Drew doesn't want to say this, but he can't play forever. But at some point, the New Orleans Saints need to be ready to have that guy in the hopper when it does go awry.
I've got I want to leave you with an analogy before we wrap up here. This is my analogy I thought of, and feel free to laugh at me. But this is the image that I have in my head about the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is my image. Remember when we were kids and you were trick-or-treating, Buck?
Mm-hmm.
And you had those kids. You had a good house. They're handing out good candy. So what you would do is you would then try and swap masks. So you'd go around. You'd hit the house, get the candy. Then you try and wait. Go hit a couple more houses. Then you'd switch masks with your buddies. And you try and go back to that house and see if you could get them again. Like, to me, the Jacksonville Jaguars, with all the defensive players that they've added in free agency in the draft, I feel like they just keep going back to that house with all those defensive studs, and they keep getting more. Just over years and years and years of adding these guys, 3-4 years. Now it's gotten to the point with that football team, they just have so many stinking dudes. They're dominating. And as good as the Patriots are, man, I tell you what, the Jacksonville Jaguars would scare the crud out of me if I were them.
Oh, they do. And the way that they've drafted, the depth and the talent, the attitude that they also have, they're primed and ready. And the funny thing is, they still can get so much better. They still can add some more pieces to that offense. They still can help the quarterback play better. But the fact that they are right there and on the cusp of maybe going to the big show, man, you have to feel good about it if you're a Jags fan.
Yeah, we'll get a chance to preview that game as well as the NFC Championship game on our preview videos, which will be up here just in a day or two. We're going to knock those out tomorrow, and we're both headed out to the East-West, and then we're going to jump over to the Reese's Senior Bowl. So a couple All-Star games going to keep us busy here for the next couple weeks as we march towards the NFL draft. But, man, I cannot wait for these conference championship games next week. We'll be back doing the audio pod. I'll be on the road. Will you be doing that with me there, Buck? Are you going to be back in L.A.? I know you're kind of going back and forth here with these two games.
I should be right there beside you because I'm at both those games for the duration of the week.
Beautiful. All right, that'll be fun. We'll have a good time in Mobile for the next audio podcast. You can check that out. We'll also have some more stuff coming tomorrow, which will be released throughout the week. So tons of Move the Sticks content coming your way. Sully, thank you so much for producing. Bucky, good to see you, pal. I'll see you bright and early, man. I got to get about 4 hours of sleep, and let's do it all over again.
Got to do it all over again. I'm ready.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. This has been Move the Sticks, presented by the Ford F-Series. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to NFL.com/podcasts.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.